Good morning and welcome to Using the Tools That You Have. I'm Emily Payne, and I'm going to introduce our panelists, and I'll tell you a little bit about how this project came to pass, and then I'm going to hand off the microphone and not be seen or heard from again. Our major contributor is Mary Lorenz, here. She is a grant coordinator on a project at Texas State University. Back over here handing out the handouts to latecomers is Michelle Janasek. Dr. Janasek is a grant director on the project that I'll describe briefly for you. We have a grant-funded project at Texas State University, funded through Texas Education Agency with adult education funds. We do the primary objective of our grant is to deliver an adult ed credential across the state of Texas. Texas is one of the few states that actually has an adult ed credential. It's voluntary. And with these two amazing people, I'm just the PI on the project. I don't do the real work. But with these amazing people, we have managed to put together enough technology with what we had, as the title suggests, the technology we had to be able to offer this credential, most of it via online and through technology. I'm going to hand it over to Mary Lorenz, and she's going to tell you the rest of it.
Good morning. They like to call me the resident office technology sponge. That's my job. Closer to my... No, you got to do this. Sorry. Okay, I'll get used to it. I'm glad you're here. Welcome. Little background on me. I was a middle school teacher for 11 years down in the Houston area before I promoted myself to work at the Texas Education Agency, where I became the statewide supervisor for the curriculum area that I taught in, and I did that for 7 years. From there, I went to the Teacher Certification Board, where I met Michelle, and she and I worked together to develop the teacher exams and oversee the teacher education programs and the state mentoring program at the time. From there, I went to the University of Texas, where I worked in their little-known, often ignored high school. They have an online high school. Did you know that? They do. They've had it for 47 years. And it's quite good. I worked as a project manager there where I supervised programmers and test development for them for several years. And then Michelle decided she couldn't live without me, and she hired me onto this project full-time. And I'm thrilled to be back with teachers. Teachers are my passion. They're what I always come back to, and they're what I love. And I'm thrilled I get to go out, be with GED teachers, and do things for them, and anything I can do to make their life easier. What I'm here to do today is to show you how to make your life easier. Did anybody go to the IPSE presentation yesterday morning on the online interactives? Yeah, great presentation. I would kill to have their team of people. You know, to have a dozen people working on a course, that is a fantasy, isn't it? Okay, but we're all here. I'm here to talk about reality. And how do you do this? And how do you figure out how to do it with one person, which is you, and with no money? I'm good at that. So if you want, I have posted the handout online electronically, and you can write down that address. I'll have it again at the end of the presentation, but I uploaded it there. It's a PDF file that you can download if you want at a later time. I wasn't sure how many people were going to be here and if I had enough handouts, so I went ahead and put it up there for the rest of the world to see. I'll give you a few minutes to put that down. Things to remember in what we're doing today is that there's no one way to do e-learning, okay? And working with those words and things, there's no one way to go about doing this. And there's lots of ways to do it. And I'm going to try to show you a bunch of different ways to do it and things you need to consider, especially if you're a one-person team and you have to be the graphic designer and the programmer and the content expert and everything, which is not hard. I've done that. It is not easy. It is not fun. But there are ways to make your life easier, and that's what I'm here to talk about today. Okay? So when I go out and I talk to people, there's a common evolution of skills that I see in curriculum designers and people who have to do online learning. And that common evolution is that when you first get volunteered to do this job and somebody hands you the 200-slide PowerPoint deck, And you get it. We've all been handed that, haven't we? Okay. So you go out and you get it and you take the PowerPoint deck and you clean it up a little, you look at the graphics and you go through and you make it, is page not found? Okay, I'll fix that later. You go through and you clean it up and you slap it up online and you're getting all the high fives because you've done what it is everybody asked you to do, and it's like your hands hurt and you're ready to go. Great. And then the next evolution comes. Somebody comes back to you and they say, yeah, that was really nice, but could you make it a little less PowerPoint-y? Yeah, she's shaking her head. She's been in those shoes. So you go and you say, okay, well, now I have to be a graphic designer, which I'm not. And how do I do that? And so you go through and you learn a little bit about graphic design and how to lay out the courses, and you do another course and you lay it out, and everybody think, oh, that's great. And it goes on for a while and they're patting your back and everything's fine. And then you go on. And they come back and they say, because they always want more, don't they? And they say, could you make this a little more interactive? And then you get into another comfort zone that you don't know how to do because you're not a programmer. You don't have a Flash programmer in your stable to go do that cool stuff for you, do you? I don't. On this grant, it's me and her. That's it.
And a quarter.
that we don't use very often. So you get it, and so you evolve, and you find some way to go learn how to do that interactive stuff and to do it right. But everybody in this room is at some level of stage of having to do that and having to learn how to do that. So we converted the course. We make it look better. Now we're going to make it more active, more interactive. So what I'm going to do today is I'm going to talk about three different areas that you need to consider as you design. I'm going to talk about rapid authoring and the authoring tools that you can use. I'm going to talk about finding rapid assets, which are the things, the visual effects that you use in your courses. And then I'm going to talk to you about rapid instructional design models and how do you do that. Okay? Rapid authoring. Software is cool. It is cool. But when you do it, there's lots of tools out there, and I'm going to try not to push any one tool. I know the tool that I use the most, and I can tell you that later. But there's lots and lots of tools out there, and you've got a lot of decisions to make. How much money did they give you to spend on it? Are they going to support it? What kind of features do I want? And you really don't know what to do. Let me give you some advice. This is what you need to do. You need to look at the software. When you look at the software, and there's lots of different software, and all of them are legitimate, and all of them are useful. I haven't tried one out yet that I didn't find useful. You'll find the one that's your favorite and the one that works for you, okay? But when you do it, the best thing to do is to take a little mini module. You can do a checklist. Okay, it has this feature, this feature, this feature, this feature, and this feature, and this feature. That's nice. But until you get in there and use it, you don't know if it's really useful. So what I suggest you do, almost all of them have a 30-day trial. Go down, download the 30-day trial, and create yourself a little mini course that you can program in, an hour or so, that's really simple, where you go through and on every one of those things that you're considering, you build the same mini course, okay? And you check it out. Does it work? Can I find the tools easily? And you do it, okay? But build the same little course in each one, because each one is going to behave differently for you. And then the next thing you need to look at is their support. When you run into a problem, is that company going to support you? The way to check that out and see if it works is to go out on their website and look at their support community and see how active it is. Because if they're not going to support you and you can't get a hold of somebody on the phone and they're not going to listen to you, you don't want to buy it. The next thing you want to look at is their community. The software programmers may make the software, but it's the users who come up with the workarounds. And do they have a good, solid, strong user community that supports them? Adobe has an incredible user community. It's huge. They're in every city. They have a great community. They share with each other. They help each other. Articulate has a huge user community. They're all about helping you to use the software better. But look at all three of those things, because it's that community that you're going to learn the most from when you buy that software. So look at the community. The tool you have. PowerPoint is not lame. All right? Get over it. Just because everybody else, and I'm going to use my boss as an example, the queen of bad PowerPoint. bow to her. I've come to live with the fact that her PowerPoints look very different from mine. There's a general rule, if you don't already know it, it's on the Master Technology Teacher exam, which I helped to coordinate the development of. No more than 6 words on a page, no more than 3 lines on a page. 3x3 rule. You got any more than that? It's too much information. Don't try to make your PowerPoint your handout. Not the same thing. Notice? Different. All right. PowerPoint is not lame. It's actually a very, very powerful tool, especially the version in 2010. It's something. How many people have PowerPoint on their desktop? Raise your hand. You can create decent, good e-learning in PowerPoint. You can do it. It has the tools, and it does a good job. But what we have to do as designers, because now we're designers, is we have to learn to think about PowerPoint in a whole different way. It's a tool. Don't let them tell you that PowerPoint sucks. It doesn't. All right? No matter what tool you use, notice, Flash, Photoshop, PowerPoint, what do all three of those have in common? They're a blank screen. Stop using the templates. Start with a blank screen. Open up your mind and start to think about how you use it differently. It's content neutral. All right? There are things to rob and things to borrow from the templates and ideas to get from the templates, but don't start with the templates. Throw them away. Start with the blank page. All right? It'll open up the possibilities for you, I promise. Many courses think about them as linear. Actually, I was talking to a guy yesterday at lunch. He says, oh, yeah, PowerPoint's really cool. And that's great for a linear course. Okay, we'll get over it. Remember when you were in high school biology, and we're all a little older in this room, we had the biology textbook, and it had the human anatomy, and it had the transparent pages? That's how I want you to start thinking about your courses. Don't think of them as going slide by slide by slide by slide by slide. You can have your slides and your content in any order. It's how you link it and how you build it that matters. You can make the branching in PowerPoint. You can make the layers. Start with a common theme and then layer it so that when the user goes through, they don't see a screen changing. All they see is the content on that screen changing. So think about how you use PowerPoint differently. All right. I showed him when I was at lunch yesterday. I was showing off my work on my website, and he looked at it. He said, "Oh yeah, that's really cool." And he said, "I can see you've got about 4 slides there." And I looked at him. I said, "You want to know how many slides are really there?" And he said, "No." And I said, "57." That's the key. So put it in layers. Don't think linear. Think layers. How can I layer the content? That's learning to use your master slides to your full advantage. It helps. Put all the parts of the screen that are the same on the master slide. Learn how to use it. Remember, the software is just a tool, all right? All software has different bells and whistles. They all have advantages. They all have disadvantages. You choose the one that works best for you, the one that you can afford. There are lots of options out there. But remember, it's just the tool. It's not the end-all, be-all of what you're doing, okay? Now let's talk about rapid assets. Assets are probably the scariest thing. There are lots of free things online, and your handout that I've given you is a resource. You don't have to type a lot of this down because almost all of it's in a handout. I'm big on resources. It's kind of in the back page. But there's lots of free stuff, and you will be surprised what you can find. Check out Microsoft Office Clipout online. Have you been there lately and see how they've changed it? It's phenomenal. They have tons of stuff, and it's free. It's not copyright protected. You can use it. I rarely, if ever, buy assets. You can go out to stock image sites if you've got a lot of money, which none of us in this room do, because I never did either, and my boss refuses to buy it for me. Like, I would kill to have a subscription to iStock Photo. Oh, that would be great, but you know, for $3,000 a year, I don't think so. Not in our budget. So I have to make do. I use Morgfile. Everybody talked about Morgfile yesterday. Microsoft Office Online. There's all kinds of free stuff out there, and it's there. And there are inexpensive things. One of the things that I like to use is a resource that's listed in the back of your packet. There are these characters, and what they do is they've got one guy, and he's like a Hispanic in a leisure suit, but it's one guy. It's 100 poses. Okay? And so you've got a guy pointing, you've got a guy holding a sign, you've got a guy sitting in a chair, you've got a guy looking frustrated. They've got a nice variety. They cost about $1 an image. I did convince her to spend $99 on that. So you've got a consistent image and a consistent look and a consistent character through your courses. It's a really easy thing to do. They're very inexpensive. Wait, I don't have enough hands today. It's in there, I promise. No, it's Hold on. I gotta look too. I don't memorize it because I wrote it down. It is elearningart.com. They do great work. They do all kinds of things. They do cartoon characters. They also do people. And they have a great, they take purchase orders even better. Okay? Best $99 you're spent. Don't ignore what's already in PowerPoint. I maybe said don't use the templates, but that doesn't mean you can't tear them apart and use the pieces of the templates that do work for you. So stop thinking of it as a whole and that I'm not allowed to alter that. You're allowed to alter that. Take your assets, get rid of the bullet points, take the bullet point default off of the master slide, get rid of it, stop it. Bullet point bad. And go look. Go look at your assets. Go look at what's out there for free. The primary software that I use to build all my e-learning courses, and I have built four in the last 3 years, and that's only about 50% of my job. Go out to the user community, see what they're giving away for free. And the user communities are incredibly important. Especially, I use PowerPoint to build my courses, and I use Articulate as a plugin to do my interactive work and convert the course to Flash. The Articulate community is awesome. They give away stuff for free all the time. People just create something and they want to share. All they want to do is help you do your job, and they, hey, here you go, try this. And it's a lot of fun. But go out there and look and see what you can download and get out of that user community for free. The Adobe community does the same thing for free. Go out to Microsoft Office clipart.com and you see the clipart, and now you're going to put on your graphic designer hat and you're going to look at the clipart and you say, okay, well, that's nice. I like this one, but I really don't like maybe the background that he's running on. So in PowerPoint, you can use group and ungroup. Ungroup the clipart and take out the little pieces that you need. You don't have to use it wholesale just because they put it up on the website like that. Get used to taking it apart. You can use little bitty elements. I know when I worked at UT, they didn't like having backgrounds in the artwork for the tests. And so we would have to find an element, and then I had to teach the programmers how to break it apart so they could take that one element out that we needed and get rid of the background that didn't print so well. You can do lots with that. Get ideas and inspiration from all kinds of places. You may not have a subscription to iStock Photo, because none of us can afford that in this room, but you can go out there and you can look at the pictures and you can get ideas, and then you can copy them. Do you see how they mimic each other? We got the guy from iStock Photo, he's going like this. He's got the starburst image in the background, and then we recreated it. Found a dude, found a hand, put it up there. So that's where you go get your ideas. You don't have to be original. You don't have to be creative. What you have to know is where to borrow and beg and steal from. All right? And you can go look at lots of things and get ideas and then replicate them in PowerPoint. It's a really phenomenal little tool. Am I going too fast? Okay. Sometimes when you're doing it and you're designing for the visual effect, because remember, online learning is a visual medium. You have to make it easy on the eyes. You have to make it pretty to look at, or they're not going to pay any attention. If it looks like PowerPoint with bullet points, they're going to click, read, yawn, click, read, yawn. Don't want it. So as simple as changing the background, so that looks like a PowerPoint slide, doesn't it? Go back and just change the background, all created in PowerPoint, but it's got a much more visual look to it, doesn't it? And just changing the background can make a dramatic difference in what you do. Use the free stuff. Don't throw out everything PowerPoint has. Don't throw out everything Microsoft has, but go tear it apart and use what you need. Okay? Take the pieces that you like and that are appealing. Let's talk about instructional design, the third branch of what I want to talk about today. The biggest thing I want you to walk away from or remember today, I concentrate and I make online professional development. I make it for adults. We tend to, because we work in K-12 schools, to treat our adult learners like they're K-12 students. They're not. Okay? So instructional design does have a definition. Yada, 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 yeah, yeah, that's real nice. So let's get down to the reality of what it is you need to do. Move away from click and read. So they dumped it. Here's your 200-slide PowerPoint deck, and they say, make this a course. You can do it. You're the computer geek in the office. Okay, great, thanks. So how do you do that? Because it's daunting. So what we're going to do is we're going to get rid of the content. And that's something in my office that I'm really good at. I'm really good at taking a big pile of stuff and taking it down to its bare bones, because teachers are busy. They don't have time. They do not have 6 hours to sit in front of a computer screen and look at your course, do they? They have 5 minutes, and you have their attention for 5 minutes. You better be able to do it. So, first thing to do is determine, what is the purpose? Am I looking to change their performance, or am I looking to convey information? So that's the first thing you got to get out of the person who's handed you this PowerPoint stack. What are you seeking to do? Are you seeking just to pass along information? Or are you seeking to change the person's performance? So you got to determine that, because those are the two kinds of courses you're going to build. Then you take what's left and you divide it into two stacks, the need-to-know stack and the nice-to-know stack. My boss, God love her, is the queen of the nice-to-know information. And it's all very relevant, but what does the person really need to know and do? Okay, what do you want them to do with what it is you're training them to do? Because this is what we face, right? We've all sat in this staff meeting. I really don't want to be here. I have things to do back in my room. Get me out of here. Learner motivation. So if you can get it down to the learner motivation, let's answer three questions. You have to answer three questions when you build that course, because a learner, an adult learner, we're not talking kids, kids learn intrinsically because I told you so and you're going to use it later in life, right? Adults don't play that way. Why do I need to take this course? You better answer that question. Why is this going to be valuable to me as a learner? These are adults. We have to think of them like adults. Next question, what am I supposed to do with all of this information? The key word there is do. What do you want them to do with the information? And the last question you have to provide for them is, how can I prove that I know it? So you got to think in those three things. So let's think of a course. Let's think of the dreaded FERPA course that everybody has to take, right? Because everybody's been asked, because FERPA, you know, the Information Privacy Act that we all have to train the teachers on because they handle student records, and it's boring as hell, right? Yeah, it's like, oh, great. Okay, so let's look at a FERPA course, all right? So why am I taking this course? Can anybody answer the question? If I'm designing a FERPA course, somebody tell me why they have to take that course. Why is this going to be valuable to them as a classroom teacher? Anybody? Anybody? Don't make me call on you. It's valid. What else? Protection from lawsuits. What else? If you don't, you get fired. Yeah, they do that to us at the university level too. All right, so I'm basically, you're required to do it. You have to do it. It's part of your job. You handle confidential student records. You have to do it. End of discussion. So the next question is, what am I supposed to do with all this information? So we're teaching them about FERPA. Now this is where it gets harder. And you have to learn to think differently. What do you want them to do with the FERPA information once they get back to their classroom? Anybody? Anybody? Pardon me? Okay, well, that's kind of generic. Can you get more specific for me? What do you want them to do? What practice? What about the records? What do you want them to do with the records? Beautiful. Yes. So We want them to take the student records, handle them in a confidential manner, and make sure that they're secure. That's what the teacher has to physically go back to their classroom and do. It's doing, all right? So we've got something. It's why do I have to do? What am I supposed to do? You're supposed to go back to your room and handle these records in an appropriate manner, in a confidential manner to protect your students. Good. Excellent. How can they prove it? So at the end of the course, you have to have some kind of documentation, because most LMSs, though they're nice, they're not going to tell you how many slides they click through, right? They're just going to tell you that they went in there and they touched it, right? So you have to have some kind of evidence that they've retained the information. And people, multiple choice questions do not happen on the job in the real world, do they? Right? Think about it. We just do those because we're used to them, right? So think outside the box and think clean slate. How can that teacher prove that they know the FERPA rules? Anybody?
Uh-huh.
Okay.
Information.
They would describe a situation. Okay, but so they're going to type up an essay for you?
Short.
All right, so you want to give them short answers? Excellent scenario. So that's how I approach them too. What I want to do, and this is the best way to write a test question, even when I've been in the testing industry. I actually work for Pearson Education. I worked on the tax test for a very short, unfulfilling time in my life. But the best test, and I learned a lot about testing, why it's tested, how the questions are written, why things are done the way they're done. It was very informative, and I learned a lot. But the best test questions, take somebody and put them in a situation, and then have them make a decision about it. Those are the best test questions, and you can do it with any subject. Put the learner in a situation. Take a paragraph, describe a situation, so we can still do multiple choice, can't we? And then give them four options for how to deal with the situation, or give them a short answer for how to deal with the situation. They're applying their knowledge to something they know and something that's immediate. These are adults. They don't learn intrinsically. Treat them like adults. Okay, that's what we've really got to do with this professional development. I was a teacher for years. I sat through that stuff. It was horrid. Okay, you can make it meaningful and make it apply to their job, something they can use right away. That's what you want. So scenarios are great. So that's the approach I almost always take with some kind of an assessment that I do in a course when I have to show knowledge. I put them in a situation, I describe it, and I force them to make a decision about how to handle it. Those work beautifully. So there are the user communities, and there are tools at your beck and call and user communities that will help you do it. They will give you tutorials. They will give you industry insights, creative solutions, templates, answers, graphics, assets, and more. When you buy your software, when you finally decide what it is you want to use, there are communities out there that will help you. You do not have to buy the Adobe software to become a part of the Adobe community. They don't care. All they want to do is help you. Okay? You can go out to eLearning Heroes, and in the back of your handout, I've got a chart with all kinds of useful things that will help you to learn how to do this faster, cheaper, better, so that it's not click, read, yawn. And none of these will take more than 10 minutes of your time to sit down and read through or look through to learn how to do it. There's all kinds out there, and they're all listed in your handout. Some of my favorites are Learning Solutions Magazine, and then, what's the last one's coming up here? E-Learning Heroes is my absolute favorite. E-Learning Heroes is the Articulate user community. You do not have to buy their software to be a part of their community. The only thing these people want to do is help you do your job better, faster, quicker, and cheaper. They don't care. They do a lot about PowerPoint. Almost everything I've told you today and instructed you on today came from this man. His name is Tom Kuhlman. He is the curator of their community. He was going to present here with me today, but he couldn't make it into town. They will teach you what you need to know. Everything I learned about how to develop e-learning courses using PowerPoint, I learned from this group of people. I put up a problem. I had a mic. My sound wasn't come out right. I went to their message board. I posted a message. And within 4 hours, I had an answer as to why my mic didn't work. They didn't care whether I used the software. They didn't care. All they want to do is help you do your job. and to do it fast, and to do it quickly, and to do it cheaply, and to remember that you're doing with adults. All right. That was fun. Now you get to ask questions. Yes, sir. Hey, Alan. How you doing? Yeah, if you're close to the mic, come on up. Thank you.
I'm actually, is this on? Can you hear me yet? Okay. I'm actually working on an e-learning solution right now, and basically they want their employees to know about something. They want them to be aware about these government regulations. And their approach in the beginning was to say, hey, this is a government regulation, you need to know it. And the employees were not very, I don't know, receptive.
Over their head.
They kind of resented it in some ways. So that was kind of one issue, like, oh, we're getting this forced down on me. And so we were trying to be a little bit more creative in our engaging part. And so that's the first sort of issue. The second issue is, for the do part, you know, that's where I kind of get stuck with this, you know, you need to know this, but the do part of what you're talking about. So if you could just sort of maybe give some suggestions.
Yeah, if you go out, there is a tutorial in your handout, and her name is Kathy Moore, and she is listed in there. And she is on the bottom of the second to last page. And she does a thing called action mapping. And she has about a 10-minute video where she walks you through how to do it. And action mapping helps to take it from the information dump, which is, God, those are horrid. Somehow, some way, that person has to know and use and honor that regulation on their job. What is it? What is the do? You know, going back to FERPA, we want them to handle student records in a confidential manner. That's what they actually have to physically go back and do. That's what an adult learner is concerned with. That's what your classroom teacher. Stop treating them like they're K-12 kids. They're not. When you're building a course and you're doing the clicking, don't lock the navigation. Let them go in any order they want. I send all my courses out for pilot testing around the state to check them, and I'll send out two versions. I send out one where the navigation is locked, where they have to go through in a sequential order, and then I send out one that's not locked, where they can go through in the order they want to. They complain. They hate being locked in it because you're treating them like a child. Treat them like an adult. Adults can go in any order. They assimilate information differently. Treat them like an adult. Don't lock the navigation, people. Don't. She's back there shaking her head. Don't lock the navigation. But you ultimately have to work through, and if you need to call me and help me work you through it, you've got to question down to how can they use it on their job. That's what matters to an adult learner. Mm-hmm. Well, come up. Yeah. So they're actually on the bottom. They're in your handout. They're all in there. I promise.
How do you deal with the content experts who insist on the need to know and the, oh, this would be nice to know, and, oh, I really think that this is just cool stuff? Yeah, how do you deal with that?
Well, it's like we said earlier, there's the need to know and there's the nice to know. And the stuff that's nice to know, you put in a handout and you attach it. All right? That's what you do. Because it's your job as the instructional designer to figure out what do they need to know to do their job. And the nice-to-know stuff, because we get a lot of that in education. Here's another regulation. Here, read it. That's nice. Put it in as an attachment. Put it in as a link. And if they really want to know about it, they're an adult learner. Treat them like an adult. Make it available. But put it in as a handout or an attachment.
I want to talk about that for a second because she had to do this with me, okay?
It took me months.
She walked onto the job, and the very first thing I said is, okay, Mary, I want you to take this face-to-face, day-long workshop and turn it into something that people in our project can do on their own time, but they can do it a bit here, a bit there, not have to sit there physically for 6, 7, 8 hours and read something. And so she actually did sit me down and say, is this a must have to know to move forward? If so, it goes here. If it's something I want them to know, but they do not have to have it or master it to move forward, we have links and attached documents. And for more information, go here. And so it's all still there. It's just not part of the actual course, if you will.
It's not force-fed.
No, and sometimes you have to have that hard discussion. You have to say, look, you've told me and you've tasked me with the job of doing this for you. I cannot do it for you if you cannot articulate for me what is the action and what is the must-have to know. You know, and we almost came to blows about it a couple of times.
Yeah, we did. And it was training, and it was the action mapping overview that Kathy Moore developed that helped me. She has a little map that you can print out that's like one page from her presentation, and that I kept on the desk that kept me focused on asking her the right questions. So literally, I walked in the office that day in November 3rd, and she handed me 450 pages of documentation for a six-hour workshop. Are you kidding me? 450 pages. So I had to take the 450 pages and get it down to what do they really need to know? And what's the nice to know? And that's your job to help that SME call that out and to have that conversation. It's a hard conversation. Anybody else?
Okay, my question is ADA and Section 508 compliance for learning disabilities.
That's a whole nother session. my university, I have to do it, and it's there, and I'm lucky that the software I use. Anybody want to guess what I taught when I taught middle school for 11 years in the Houston area? Can you tell? Nobody knows. I was a shop teacher. I have all my fingers. I was actually in my last several years of teaching a National Teacher of the Year for that subject area, so I've always been about in my teaching because I had everything in my room from the kid in the wheelchair who couldn't walk to the GT kid who knew more than I did, all in the same room, all at the same time, and so I was used to multiple modalities, so it's almost automatic for me now. And so the software that I use, Articulate, allows me to, when I present something, I've got the visual, and then I narrate over it, so they're getting the auditory, and then all of my narration appears in a script, in a notes section on the side, and they can read it. And so it's hitting all of those for me. Probably the hardest thing is writing the scripts for me. So, anybody else? Any other questions? Don't make me call on you. Really? Yeah, come on up. Let me help you. I want you to make your job easier. Let me.
I work for AISD, and we're just starting the e-learning journey.
Oh, good.
We have Adobe Connect as a district-wide license. Okay. How do you convince people that watching an hour and a half webinar is not as effective as interactive learning?
You have to show them. Take the hour and a half webinar, put it into PowerPoint, and make it into something that they can do in a shorter amount of time. And you actually have to show them. I had to show her what I could do. She didn't believe me. She wanted the bullet points with the 400 words on the slides, and I was like, no. In fact, most of the times when I do presentations, you notice your handout is different than what's on the screen. It would be pointless to give you my screenshots, really. I think that's an insult to my audience to give them my PowerPoint. I'd rather give you a useful handout that has useful stuff in it. And convincing, you got to build one. Build one and show them the possibilities and what can be done. Go out to eLearning Heroes. They post. They actually have a competition every year that anybody can enter, and you'll see some of the best stuff. And it's all created in PowerPoint. It's amazing. And again, they don't care if you buy their product. All they want to do is help you do your job and make it easier. And I'm just down in San Marcos. Call me.
And you know, I'm guilty of this. I mean, we're educators, we know better.
She's horrible.
We know people learn differently, and we know that some people need that physical manipulation of the data and the information, and yet we insist upon not giving people the opportunity to learn in multiple ways. And so watching a webinar, it may work really well for somebody like me who I can read something or hear it and it's here forever. But other people can't do that, and that was the big hurdle for us, is she had to remind me of what I already knew. Other people don't learn the way you do, Michelle. And once you can get that conversation and that idea out on the table and show them what it can be, that we can meet all the different learning needs of people and make it interactive and make it engaging and not make it click, read, yawn, which is Mary's favorite, you know, don't do that. Once you get them talking about it and remind people, you know, we're educators, we know better, then you can usually get them past that and allow get them to let you do something more creative.
Yeah, one of the good things about Adobe Connect is you may conduct it live once, and then you save the recording, and then people can listen to it on demand, and that way they can stop and start it whenever they want to and do it in little pieces. And sometimes you might just do a fake one. If they're insisting that you use Adobe Connect, you use Adobe Connect. But do it, record it, and then post it. And my learners tell me the best thing about my videos and any learning that I do is that no one segment is more than 5 minutes long, really. Teachers, we're busy. We teach with students all day. We've got all the paperwork after school. Remember who your learner is. People, they have 5 minutes. Use their time well. Don't any section of any module or any learning that I do is no more than 5 minutes long. It took me 2 years to convince her to do that, that was okay. 5 minutes. So they can do their 5 minutes, hang it up, come back, and go back to the recording later. So they listen to it in little chunks, so little pauses. Here, take a break. Go do this. You can do it. And I think putting the recordings up is valuable. That way they do it when, on their time, in their speed. They can go back, listen back and forth, and Adobe Connect will allow you to do that. It's a good tool. Anyone else? Cool.
Hi. I don't know if this is quite the forum, but I'm going to ask anyway. I work for Region 18 Education Service Center, and I'm also an adjunct instructor, and about the same time in both jobs, I was charged with online learning, and I don't know anything about it. And so I'm quickly having to teach myself, because probably this summer I'm going to teach not only all our consultants, but teachers in our districts how to build online courses. A big component of our online courses right now is collaboration. And I find it incredibly difficult to get teachers and or students to collaborate in a way that is authentic. It's thus far has felt very artificial. Do you have any ideas on how to get participants to work in a forum in a way that's similar to face-to-face, at least naturally, you know, feeling natural?
That's a challenge for a lot of people. Yeah. So your courses are going to be synchronous, meaning they have a set time? You do it these 6 weeks, everybody's
both.
Enrolled for these six
we'll
weeks?
We'll have synchronous and asynchronous.
In asynchronous, it's more difficult, but it's possible. It's much more possible in a synchronous course. But what you have to have is a very strong facilitator, because the facilitator and the person doing the course, it's online. Actually, most teachers, when they teach online, say it's actually harder, because you have to be so much more active in guiding that threaded discussion, and you make it a requirement. They have to go into the threaded discussion. You've got to post once and respond three times every week. And then you get in there as the moderator, and you have to be very, very active in it. So it's actually, a lot of people say it's harder. My courses right now are all asynchronous, meaning I may have 20 people enrolled at one time. I may have three. They do it on their own time whenever they want. I just give them a time limit. It's hard, and eLearning Heroes talks a lot about that, about how to conduct those and how to do it. And if you're going to have to go out and teach, Region 4 actually does a beautiful and has for years an how to be an online teacher course that Region 4 does that is really, really good that will help people learn how to do that.
Great, thank you.
You're welcome. You had one over here?
For years, I work in a school district, and for years we've been doing handouts, very step-by-step handouts on how to use the technologies in our school. And we're trying to transition to demonstration video, so the teachers, it's quicker. We did that, and our teachers are now calling us and saying, can we have a handout for that? Because they want to have their finger on the handout and on the screen at the same time. How would you recommend transitioning them to videos, or would you recommend that we do both, videos and handouts?
Both. People are different learners. You've got the auditory and the visual learners who want to see you click on the screen and hear your voice. And then you've got the people who need the piece of paper with the screenshots. When you do, and I always provide both so that the learner can use either one. And I use the method I use. The most recent course I finished was on our teachers critically reflect when they write to earn their credential. And it's you know, how to get in the system and upload it. We have a beautiful system. It's really great, but it's not perfect. And so it takes some hand-holding to get through it. And so I've got a video that hand-holds them through it, and I've got a piece of paper that hand-holds it. So they can use either one that works for them. I always recommend doing both. And not very many words on the handout. People don't read words on those handouts. They read pictures. Pictures with big things. Click here. Circle it with a big red circle or a big arrow that says click here. Not many words, because they don't read them. That's what I've discovered. So they don't put words, put pictures and screenshots and do that. That's what they pay attention. They want to see what they see on the screen.
You mentioned that you convert your PowerPoint slides into Flash. Can you tell me what the ADA compliance guidelines are for Flash?
I have no idea. and it's Articulate that converts my PowerPoint into Flash. And I know the people from IPSE made a great point, and I'm very aware of it. I've been schooling her for about a year. Flash is on the wane. You know, you have to pay attention when the internet, when Microsoft says, well, the next version of Explorer won't support Flash, then you sit up and pay attention. Adobe is coming out with Adobe Edge that does HTML5. Articulate in another month or so is coming out with what they call Storyline, which pushes out to HTML5 or Flash. It does either. I don't know the Flash things. I know when I was at UT and we did the online high school courses and the Flash work that we did, they had a cartoon with voiceovers, and then you could always pop up the captioning. So they could read it, because we had a lot of Spanish-speaking kids and migrant kids who took our courses, and they couldn't listen to the characters talk, but they could read the English real slow. So we, you provided a stop button so it could pause and they could read. And so Articulate does that for us. It has a notes pane that I read the script off of when I narrate, and I've had pilot testers tell me, I kind of like that because you talk really slow when you narrate. You have to slow down and use your narrator voice. And some people listen faster than I talk when I narrate. I know I'm talking really fast now. But they like that they could click over to the notes and just read it and go on. So they had the option.
Okay, so I do online training, asynchronous, either Blackboard or I'm going to move to Project Share. And I just did a gaming class, and I just thought, how cool. We use Articulate some at our service center, and some of the activities are a little bit limited. So I'm thinking some of this gaming stuff, pretty cool, make a game, put it, you know, embed it because you can. Is that a crazy idea?
No, it's not crazy at all. It's great.
As a matter of fact, I'm sending her to training on gaming soon, so.
Where are you going?
I'm the sponge. I'm the sponge. I get kind of interested in something. And I open my mouth and she goes, well, why don't we train you on that? Spring break. I don't have a spring break next week. I'm going to Mississippi to go to college for a week. Anybody else? I hope what you've heard today has been useful and practical. That is what I'm about, how to make your job easier, how to help you find what it is you need to do your job. If you're alone, I'm in your shoes, people. I only get to work on my programming about 50% of my time. And it takes me, most people say, how long does it take you to make a 6-hour course, which is about a 1-day course? It takes me about 11 months, but then I only work at it about 50% of the time. And a lot of it, part of it is convincing people that it does take that long. Especially when you're doing it by yourself and the work that goes into it. So my email's on the bottom. If I can ever help you, please don't hesitate. I'm all about the queen of too much information.
Mary, did you give them a link to our website so they could take a look at an example?
I'll show you an example real quick. Hold on.
Okay. Make sure you grab one of Mary's business cards before you leave. She brought a big stack, and you can go and take a look at our website. We don't have any one of our entire courses up there. Rather, we have little bits and pieces for people to look at because there are things they have to do before they enroll. But anybody can take a look at any of the introductory pieces that are on our website.
My brain can spell, but my fingers can't. There we go.
Don't know.
Welcome to the overview for the Texas Adult Education Teacher Credential.
You can hear my narrator voice.
We are excited that you have an interest in pursuing the Texas Adult Education Teacher Credential. The decision you make today to pursue the credential will help you along the path towards improving the quality of instruction you provide for your students. Let's get started.
So in here, when we look
through the module descriptions, click on the buttons on the left-hand side.
This is cool because you have to remember to satisfy your users' need to click on things. You got to provide them opportunities to click on things.
The first module provides an overview of the credential.
Again, I don't lock them into clicking on all three. Don't do that. These are adults. Don't lock them into clicking on all three buttons. That's bad.
History and the purpose of the credential.
They may not want to look at the overview of the credential. Boring. So let them go to the next slide. Don't lock them.
The credential works by providing a framework for you to use when planning specific PD activities. It will help you to carefully think through the reasons why you choose certain PD activities to implement and test.
Yeah, they go up here in attachments. And I can put web links up there. I can put documents up there that download. Satisfy their need to click. You go to txstate.edu. It's on my business card. Here they are. You can look there. If you look under the section on resources for enrolled teachers, I actually have some more video resources there that I created that use 5 minutes videos to teach them how to write different parts of their writing that they do, 5 minutes on how to upload, 5 minutes on how to download, where I teach them through. Thank you for being here today. Good luck, and have a wonderful conference.